This call is being recorded.
Welcome back to the Cut the Pill Telesummit, where we're talking all week about safe and effective alternatives for common complaints. I'm your host, Tony Crabtree of Crabtree Healthy Living, and our guest for this session is Dana Zarcone. Dana is a psychotherapist and a personal transformation coach. And Dana, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Telesummit.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here. I want to ask you the same question I'm asking everyone first off. I would like to know from you, what was it that particularly interested you in speaking on the Cut the Pill Telesummit?
You know what? This summit is a perfect platform for me to get my message out. I'm the founder of Source Your Joy, where I help people overcome depression, stress, anxiety, and I help them do that naturally so they can dance with life again. I'm a national certified counselor and a certified core energetic practitioner, and I use a holistic kind of mind, body, spirit approach with my clients, and it's really, really powerful and very transformative. And what I found throughout the 13 years I've been doing this is that it is a very powerful modality for helping people overcome depression naturally without the use of antidepressants and medications. So this summit is just perfect for me to get my message out that medications, albeit there's all kinds of marketing out there to tell you it's the solution, it's not the only solution, and there are other alternatives.
And that's awesome. I'm so excited that we're going to get into this. Depression is a huge problem these days and treatment for depression. And this is the reason, everyone, I was so excited about having Dana on the call with me today is that it's something that I'm not a stranger to either. And it's not a secret that in my family, the women in my family have had our struggles with depression. My oldest sister, in fact, ended her life due to depression. And so it's something that I know is a significant issue. And whether it ever gets to that point, for our listeners or not, it's a matter of, it's just such a generalized thing that so many people are having some sort of treatment for it. And I really think it's important that we discuss that here. So I'm really grateful to have Dana here. Now, Dana, you mentioned that you are a psychotherapist, and I'm so intrigued to find out how you came to choose that career path for yourself and all that education in the first place. Can you fill us in on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I kind of came about it on purpose in one hand, but accidental in another. I was in the corporate world for 24 years, and I was climbing the corporate ladder and, you know, really type A personality, wanting to be really successful and all this kind of stuff. But in the reality of things, I really felt this pull to help people. And so in the midst of my career, this is before kids, I went back and I got my master's in psychotherapy. And then at the same time, when I graduated with my master's, I had gone to a four-year program at the Institute of Core Energetics and became a certified core energetic practitioner. And I really, really loved the work. And during the time, like I mentioned, it was before kids, I was working all day in the corporate world, and then in the evenings I would see clients. And I specialized in women of domestic violence victims. And as you can believe, domestic violence victims, depression is a very prevalent symptomology with domestic abuse. And so it's something that really became near and dear to my heart. And it's very, very important to me to be focusing on women and helping them empower themselves and go from a, oh, but he said he was sorry, to, oh my God, I deserve more. How do I get out? How do I have a better life? And I really love that work. But then I had kids and things changed. And so I wound up focusing on my kids, and we also wound up being relocated. And at the time, doing the therapy just wasn't working for me. And then eventually, after 24 years in the corporate world, I decided to leave and go follow my passion, which is helping people overcome depression, helping people reclaim their power. And I decided to get back into that. And part of that was because when I was in the corporate world, I too became depressed. And I'll tell you, it's interesting because I didn't know it. You know, I had all the makings of a really successful life. I was a good six-figure earner in the corporate world. I was a senior leader. I had the wife, you know, the kids, the dogs, the white picket fence, the nice car. Everything on the outside was, wow, she's got just this great life. But I'll tell you, on the inside, I was empty. I was numb, and I had just completely lost myself. And I thought at the time that I was in a funk, that I, you know, eventually I'm just going to snap out of it. I don't know what's wrong with me. Why can't I just be happy? And, you know, thinking, God, I can't even remember the last time I truly laughed. Like, I just don't feel happy. But long story short, I didn't get over it. I realized I think I might need some help here. I think I actually might be depressed. So I went and saw a therapist, and I found this core energetic therapist, which is what got me into that modality. And I'll tell you, it was the most powerful process I had ever been through, and it changed my life literally forever. It's just a beautiful, beautiful form of work, and it changed my life forever, and I was able to overcome depression naturally.
That's awesome. So let's talk about that a little bit more. So what I heard is that you were able to help victims of domestic violence with their depression, with the psychotherapy, and then when you had a deepening or a different experience when you were addressing your own symptoms as well. And I find it very fascinating, and I've certainly seen this with other people, that we get in this state, but we don't have a name for it. We don't know that's what it is. And sometimes we can be distracted from figuring out what it is by not having a way to describe how we're feeling. So that feeling empty, that feeling depressed, and not even really realizing it. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. As I say, you're bringing up a really important point that I think is so important for the listeners to understand, is that we have this, there's such this huge stigma about what depression is, and people picture people who are depressed as someone who can't get up out of bed in the morning, and, you know, all they do is sit around, and they're lethargic, and they're just, you know, ugh. And that's really not necessarily how depression is. That's the major depressive disorder that certainly is out there with people. But one of the most common forms of depression is dysthymia, which is a chronic mild form of depression, which is certainly what I had, where you really do, you just feel kind of numb. You don't feel alive and vibrant anymore. You don't feel joyful. You just feel like you're living your life by default and not by design. You feel like you're on this hamster wheel and you're just going through the motions, and, you know, you lack that feeling of joy and happiness, and where you think about, God, when did I even smile, really smile? And that is a form of depression, and that's the most common form of depression, and people have a hard time putting their thumb on it because they do think they're just in a funk, when the reality is that they are depressed. And the important thing for people to understand is it's nothing to be ashamed about. You know, it happens to so many of us. 30% of the population will suffer with depression. So it's a very common condition, and there's nothing to be ashamed about. The key is to just make sure that you recognize it and that you take the proper steps to try to get better and to heal.
And I think it's interesting, too, to note that on the outside, we could look like we're doing fine. We're fully functional, even with that kind of depression. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's the way I was. People looked at me and, oh my God, how can she, there's no way she'd be depressed. And you know, the thing is too, is that mask I wore myself, because there is this thing that, oh, people quote like me don't get depressed, you know, six figure successful career woman. And it's, again, it goes back to that stigma. And I called myself a functioning depressaholic. I was highly functioning on the, you know, I was still getting promoted and all this kind of stuff, but it really boiled down to how I felt inside. And I really felt just numb and empty and hopeless, you know, but I was getting up. I was working out every day. I was going for hikes. I would just seemed, quote, normal, for lack of a better word, even though there really is no normal, right? but yeah, and I just inside, it's this feeling inside. What kind of vibration, what kind of energetic vibration are you holding in your life?
Mm-hmm. And does guilt go along with that sometimes? Like, I'm feeling not so great, but what do I have to not feel good about?
I think guilt is definitely prevalent in these kinds of cases. I certainly felt it. It was that, you know, wow, like what do I have to be depressed about? And again, it's not about that. I think the thing that people need to understand is that guilt is basically a facade, right? It's something that I put out there because I want to disassociate with my condition. The depression, there's nothing to feel guilty about or even ashamed about, because depression comes from unhealed wounds. It comes from our wounds that we experience in our early childhood formative years that we have, all the feelings around those wounds that we have repressed and that we have held tight and, you know, held close in our belt. And if you think about it, from everything we think, we are energetic beings, right? And so feelings are a form of energy. And when we have our feelings that's associated with these early childhood experiences of psychological trauma, abuse, disconnection from the primary caregiver and those kinds of things, we have feelings. We have very strong feelings about that experience when we're really, really young. But yet society and our parents and everybody around us tells us we are not allowed to have those feelings. So they shut us down. So what do? We repress our feelings. Those repressed feelings wound up getting held in the body. The body is a beautiful, beautiful mirror of what's really going on within someone. So while I seemingly look like there's nothing to be depressed about, I had early childhood wounds that I had not faced, that I had not dealt with, and certainly had not processed. So going through the core energetic work that I went through, it just unearthed all kinds of things I didn't even know was there. But it moved my energy and shifted me into such a beautiful place. I was able to tap into my vital life energy and live a joyful life with greater meaning and purpose again.
And this is what you're doing with your clients now, is taking them through the core energetics process?
Absolutely, yeah. And in core energetics, we use movement, we use touch, breath work. We're tapping into, it's a very multimodal approach. So it's mind, body, heart, and spirit. And it really is working on your energy, because when you have those repressed feelings that you have not wanted to feel from very, very early into your life, those are frozen in your body, and that freezes your energy. And because you're freezing the, quote, bad feelings, you're freezing yourself from feeling any feeling, because the body energetically does not distinguish between a good feeling or a bad feeling. So when you're pressing your feelings, you're repressing all of your feelings. And that's why we say we feel numb, right? Empty, numb, those kinds of things. So by working it with your energy and helping to unblock those repressed feelings and work through them, you create a higher energetic flow and energetic vibration, which is extremely powerful, and it's very healing.
That is awesome. So I'm hearing some things brand new, and I know that in a lot of situations that we're in, certainly as children, right? Be quiet, I'll give you something to cry about. Some of us heard that as a child, or we just didn't know what to do with the emotions that we had and may not have had a safe place to express them. And then as adults, we have to be rough, tough, corporate, or whatever, stoic. And for some of us, I can see how layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of those emotions. And I totally get that numb feeling of not being able to feel any highs or lows anymore. Everything's right. Kind of bland. So, right. Wow.
And it's important as adults to know that we're only capable of, we live at the emotional level of our healed wounds. So if you have a lot of wounds that haven't been healed, you're going to live at that emotional level. And so as an adult, it's important to create a supportive environment so that you can go back and unearth all those, the rage, the anger, the sadness, the longing, all these things that you felt as a child that really truly back then felt life-threatening to you. It's like they're so overwhelming and they're so powerful when you're young that you push them down and you won't feel them, right? But as adults, we have the ego strength now to honor ourselves and to process those feelings in a very healing way. So it's not going to feel near as threatening as it would have had we dealt with those when we were younger.
Right. And so some of those wounds that you're talking about, and I think it's pretty clear to everyone that if there's abuse of some sort, physical or emotional abuse, that would be noted and that would be carried, that would be considered a wound. But also some of the normal things that happen to us as children, like we get yelled at because we're about to do something dangerous, but we don't understand that person's trying to keep us out of danger. Can that also create a wound depending on how the child reacts or responds to that?
Yeah, it can, but not so much, because for instance, the wound usually happens when there's two different ways is the ways the wound happens. First of all, there's an emotional disconnection from the primary caregiver, where they've emotionally disconnected from you. And then there's also chronic wounding. So it's the, you know, picture your father yelling at you, you know, put that down, I'm going to get my belt, you know, those kinds of things. And you energetically, your shoulders lift, you stop breathing, your eyes get big, your jaw gets tight, all these things happen. And so when that chronically happens, when you have these similar experiences over and over again, that's where all that held energy comes, and it manifests in your body. So you can actually see, it's a very, very powerful diagnostic tool for us as energetic therapists, because I can tell where the blocks are. I can usually tell when the wounding happened, how early in your formative years the wound took place, just based on feeling and reading the energy in your body. So it's very powerful. So that's one thing to note. The other thing to pay attention to is that not every wound or not every traumatic experience is going to wound each of us the same way, because one of us may be coming into this world more evolved, if you will, than others. And so things may be less threatening, or I may respond to a certain wounding experience differently than somebody else. But those wounding experiences still manifest in the body, and it forms our muscular structure. It informs how we breathe. It informs all kinds of things around how we how this manifests us in our body and how it happens to affect us biologically.
That's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. So to go from psychotherapy, as we might be familiar with it, to the core energetics, what was that process like as far as training and that sort of thing? And are there a lot of people who do that?
It's getting more popular as we go. And because one of the biggest aspects, one of the powerful aspects of this type of therapy is also the spirituality of it. That's really the foundation of the work we do, is really having that faith in a higher power, whatever that may be for any individual, but having that faith in a higher power. And for me, shifting into the core energetics piece of it was actually because I did the work as a client. And that's what I love about the work I do, is I've walked the talk. I know the process. I know the pain, and I know how powerful the transformation can be. And so when I went from the traditional talk therapy, you know, master's in psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral kind of stuff, and I shifted from the tell me more about it kind of approach to really working with my own energy, I couldn't believe the change in me and the change of all my classmates. And it was just beautiful. Not only is it healing for you as an individual, but it's also very powerful for developing true deep connections with each other. And then you have that support network, and you have people in your life that can support and hold you up when you feel like, you know, falling down. And it's just really powerful. So when I did the work myself, I was like, okay, I absolutely have to do this work with clients, because I know how much it can help people, and I know how transformative it is. And I also know firsthand how it is such a powerful solution compared to antidepressants, because you're really, instead of just trying to deal with the symptoms of feeling numb, sad, hopeless, now you're really getting to the root cause. You're dealing with the real root issues of depression and transforming them.
So awesome. We're going to talk a little bit more about medications and some misunderstandings about that in a minute. But I do want to ask you a little bit more about the core energetics and what that might look like for someone. So practically speaking, is it a one-on-one thing? Is it in a group? Can it be done virtually at all? What is it like if someone were to participate in it? What is that like for a participant?
You know, it really varies depending on what the participant is bringing into the session. But generally speaking, it can be done one-on-one. It can be done in groups. Both are powerful, just depending on where the client is in their process. Lots of times, one-on-one is a great place to start, because you're really starting to get to know all aspects of yourself. You're kind of getting reacquainted with yourself, and you can do that in a safe environment, one-on-one with your therapist. But the work of a group is extremely powerful, because there's transference, counter-transference, there's all kind of issues that come up in a group that help to facilitate the healing of any individual. So groups are extremely powerful as well. So in person works well. Virtually, I do virtual sessions with my clients because you can still work with their energy. I can still sense their energy when I'm doing virtual sessions, and I can still guide and direct them to either very subtle movements. Sometimes it may be just moving your pelvis in a certain way so you can kind of awaken your root chakra, or it might be opening and closing your eyes really, really big so that you can get in touch with some rage or some fear that you've been repressing. And so they can be, the work can be very subtle and soft, and there's a lot of power in approaching it with those kinds of techniques. And sometimes it can be loud and aggressive, just depending on what the client is working on. So oftentimes you may have someone using a bataka and hitting a big styrofoam cube, you know, moving your feelings and your emotions. Using voice can be very, very powerful to really unearthing a lot of those repressed feelings.
And so all of that serves to release that or shift that stored blocked energy so that there can be room for something else then?
So that your energy can flow unrestricted.
Awesome.
Right. And when your energy flows unrestricted, see what happens is when we have anger, rage, sadness, all this kind of stuff, oftentimes it creates a heart pelvic split. It can create a heart head split. So a client may be all in their head and not really feel their heart at all. Or they may be all in their pelvis and not feel their heart at all. So it's a way of truly bridging that gap and making it so that you are in all aspects of yourself. You're in your heart, your head, and your pelvis, and you're whole, if you will. Right. So there's no longer an energetic split.
Okay. And so when I hear experience being all in my head, I'm trapped in my thoughts. I'm like they're between me and the rest of the world, and I'm not really present. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Bingo. Okay. When you unblock this energy, you are at every moment you're in touch with everything that's going on with you. You'll have more sensitivity to your gut, what your gut's telling you, because you're not always in your head, and they work together. It's kind of like your team of consultants, if you will. They all work together to kind of keep you grounded, keep you present, and you're able to make to deduce life in a very grounded way versus being all in your head where you can't really feel your gut, what your gut's trying to tell you. You can't feel your heart. So, for instance, if you're having an experience with somebody where let's say there's some conflict and you're getting in this verbal argument, your heart will be more present in that so that you can resolve a conflict in a more constructive, loving way versus being all in your head and having the energy of, I have to be right.
Mm. Yes, I get that totally. That's great. So it's having those different aspects of ourselves working together as opposed to in isolation or maybe even working against each other, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it would be the whole aspect of mind, body, spirit. So they're all in harmony with each other.
That's awesome. So you touched a little bit on medication, and I want to come back to that. And neither of us is suggesting to anyone that they do anything differently in regards to medication, only want to share some stuff with you to think about, right? But I would love for you as a psychotherapist to speak to some of the misconceptions people may have, some of the things that you've learned in your journey working with clients and in your education.
Sure. And one of the things, and to your point, you know, I am one that will challenge the use of medications because I do feel that it is a last resort, or it should be used in instances where it is in case of emergency and those kinds of things. There are some exceptions, but generally speaking, what I'm trying to do is educate people about the reality and the facts about depression medication so that they can make a more informed decision about their approach to treating depression. And so it's just important for people to look at all aspects of it. And first and foremost is that there is so many myths out there about depression. And one of the things that is really clear and a myth that needs to be debunked is that depression is not a disease. It really is not a disease. In fact, there's a total lack of evidence that depression is a disease like cancer, diabetes, a cold, the flu, and anything like that that is a biological condition you treat with medications. With diabetes, it's insulin, you know, and those kinds of things. So you're treating a disease with medications. And there's been a 50-year study that concluded that there wasn't any abnormality in blood, spinal fluids, or brain of anyone who's depressed. So if that is in case correct, then how can we conclude that meds are the best form of treatment for something that is not a disease, but rather just a condition or symptoms that something else is wrong? Meaning, I've got all kinds of rage, I've got all kinds of sadness and all kinds of frozen stuff in me that I need to heal. I've got wounds I need to heal. And taking medications is not going to allow you to heal those wounds. What it will do is it will mask the symptoms of depression. So it's important to look at that. And there were all kinds of studies that were done, and I've done a lot of research around how clinical trials were run when they were launching these depression medications. And quite frankly, I was completely shocked at what I had learned. And a lot of the fallacies that happen are, you know, there was a limited number of participants in the clinical studies. The duration of the studies were relatively short compared to people who take medications who are on it for a more longer term basis. Lots of times there was bias. In fact, the Archives of General Psychiatry reviewed published and unpublished trials over the course of 10 years, and they concluded that tricyclics and SSRIs, which are very prominent depression medication forms, were only slightly more effective than placebos, which we're talking sugar pills. Another review about a year later determined that 69% of the placebo-controlled studies indicated absolutely no difference between medications and placebos. So if the placebo is as equally as effective as medications, what does that tell you about the effectiveness of medications? So just some things to think about. Right. Just some things to think about that I think is just really, really important. And one thing I do want to say, you know, there's that I think is really important too, is that the National Institute of Mental Health, they conducted a multi-center, multi-year study, and they determined that the psychotherapy produced better results than antidepressants. In fact, one publicized study looked at people with chronic depression, also known as dysthymia, and they looked at their history of childhood trauma, and they determined that the combination of drugs and therapy were only marginally better than psychotherapy alone. So there's a lot of powerful studies out there that are saying psychotherapy, a therapeutic modality like Cornergetics and other techniques and strategies like meditation, yoga, and so forth can be effective at treating depression as well.
So if I'm understanding, then all of this research has not proven that there's really a clinical, physical condition or illness called that is depression, but it's real, but it's a symptom of something underlying. Is that
absolutely
okay? Yes. And then all these studies that come out and tell us why we should be taking XYZ medication or whatever. And I'm sure we've all seen the pharmaceutical ads on TV. If you watch primetime TV or you get a women's magazine and you see them, but you're saying that the results from many of those studies are quite questionable in terms of how effective those medications are.
They are very questionable. And in fact, there's I have this report that your listeners can download from me so they can get a lot more of the details. I go into a lot more detail on this. But there was also some evidence. There was some psychiatric committees that reviewed a lot of the studies that were done. And it was alarming to find out that a lot of the stuff that was released was biased, meaning that the pharmaceutical companies were publishing the positive results about the benefits of their medications, and they were not publishing all of the results that showed negative effects. Mm-hmm. So only positive results were being published, and two-thirds of the negative results that they had determined were not published. which is
so they're
really,
selectively sharing the results then.
They're selectively sharing the results. And in fact, there was one study that also talked about observers who were in charge of taking down all the information about the participants and the results and what did they feel or not feel, those kinds of things. Most of these observers were even paid by the pharmaceutical companies. So they were by far biased. They were not objective at all. So that's something to keep in mind. And I think that, you know, when we really take a big step and we look back at it, you know, pharmaceutical companies are dumping tons of money into massive marketing campaigns, and they're touting antidepressants as the solution for overcoming depression. They encourage primary care physicians to prescribe the drugs by providing economic incentives. That's something else to keep in mind. And at the same time, look at what's happening in medical health benefits. The medical health plans are being reduced. So you're not allowed to see a mental health professional for as long as you might need to, because they're cutting back on how long you can see them, the duration of an appointment, and also they're getting a little bit too involved, in my opinion, about the disclosure of information about how I diagnose a client, which is why I don't take insurance anymore.
and I know a lot of mental health professionals do not any longer.
And that's why, because it puts us in a very precarious position that we are having to disclose confidential information about our clients and what we decided to diagnose them with, that then comes into question by the insurance companies because they don't want to pay the bill. They're what's their job? Their job is to save money, right? And they want to keep as much money as they possibly can. So they're making our life and, you know, our job very difficult. So, you know, it's just important that, you know, pharmaceutical companies are dumping all this millions of dollars into touting antidepressants as the, you know, the quick fix, when really there is not a quick fix. If you look at it not being just a symptom and you really understand that it is a wake-up call, that there's something unhealed within you that needs to be resurrected and dealt with, that's when, you know, a pill's not going to let you do that.
Right.
That's not the answer.
I think you're absolutely right. And whether we're talking about depression or we're talking about diabetes, all of those things are a symptom of something underlying that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And the body or the spirit or the mind, they're all crying out for attention.
Right.
Like there's
absolutely
something here. And it doesn't always have to be like that. There are things that we can do. I want to touch on a couple things that you mentioned there. I heard you say something about economic incentives for doctors. That sends up a red flag right there. Mm-hmm. That's still going on, huh?
Mm-hmm. It is. Oh.
So economic incentive means money.
It means money. Yep. The more they prescribe, the more that the pharmaceutical companies are pumping back to the physicians. It's all, if it's this three-ring circus between the healthcare companies, the physicians, and the pharmaceutical companies. They're all in this together. And if you think about that, you know, they all have ulterior motives. You know, are they truly interested in your well-being? Or are they interested in increasing their bottom line?
Right. And I think you're touching on one of the big issues in the American healthcare system right there,
right,
that I think
right.
many of us are aware of. We sure wish it weren't true, but it certainly does seem to be true. And one of the ways that you can hear that is when you do listen to those pharmaceutical ads, or you read, if you were to read the fine print on product inserts or on the magazine ads and things like that, you would see a laundry list of kind of unsettling, at least, potential side effects. And so are there side effects in general that people should be aware of before they, I mean, I understand somebody might want to just, you know, depending on what the circumstances are on, I've been in this situation where I was under tremendous stress and I had lost my father and I was down and wasn't able to get it turned around. So, you know, medication wasn't the first thing I wanted to do, but it was what I knew to do at the time.
Mm-hmm.
There were some side effects that I wasn't expecting, though. And so is that something you could speak to, like things that are kind of typical or common? Or
I can't. And you know what? I can't generalize, because depending on whether you're taking an SSRI or whether you're taking an MAOI, or any of the others, you know, they all affect you differently because they've been produced and manufactured to approach depression in a certain way, right? But I can tell you, like, for instance, as an example, with SSRIs, what they do is they selectively affect the metabolism of your serotonin, and it's a neurotransmitter.
Yeah, can you say what SSRI stands for our listeners?
Yeah, that is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And it, what it does is it inhibits the serotonin from affecting the neurotransmitters. So that is something that is, it's one of the newer ones. That is Prozac, Paxil, those kinds of medications. And the side effects have been actually pretty significant in some of the studies that have been done. For instance, 50% of the participants in the studies reported gastrointestinal problems, 20% reported serious headaches, 15% reported increased nervousness and agitation. Here's a biggie, 70% of people taking these reported sexual dysfunction. Significant weight gain is another thing. A long-term use of SSRIs, it is suspected that they cause deterioration of the brain function in the frontal lobe of the cerebral cortex. Significant weight gain, increased risk even of developing a debilitating disorder like Parkinson's disease.
Wow.
So the side effects of taking depression medications, and this is something for anybody who's looking, this is why, A, do not ever just stop taking depression medications. It is,
right.
It can be life-threatening. You never want to do that. But when you're looking at weighing, do I want to take a depression medication, think about the benefits, and in this report you'll see how the what the findings were of the studies of how effective they are, and I think we've touched on this already, how effective some of these depression medications are as opposed to a placebo. Remember, we said that in some serious studies that were conducted, they found them to be equal. A placebo and a depression medication equally affected depression. And when you're looking at those things, is the view worth the climb? What kind of side effects will you get by taking a depression medication versus going the natural route? Case in fact, and I can't remember the medication off the top of my head, Tony, but if you look at some of the depression medication ads, you will see that there are some medications that are now being advertised and have been for quite some time as, if you're taking depression medication X, you should also be taking this medication Y. Well, why are they doing that? Because they're trying to thwart the side effects from taking the medication, the depression medication. So they're trying to offset the side effects by giving you yet another medication that you need to take so that
right.
you don't have to feel it, right? So, you know, it's just, it can be this never-ending spiral of medication after medication. And also in, another thing was that in some cases, there were studies done in both Britain and the U.S. that discovered that there's a high risk of suicidal ideation, attempts, and follow-through. As well as an increase in homicidal tendencies in children, adolescents, and young adults that were taking SSRIs. And as a result, the FDA now requires a warning on their label, the label of their product, to make sure that people are. But yet it's amazing how these things can still be allowed on the marketplace.
It's stunning. I mean, it is. I am stunned.
Well, and heck,
to
we didn't even bring
that.
Into the government. You know, these are pharmaceutical companies getting rich. Who are they padding to make sure these things stay on the market?
Right.
And again, it treats the symptoms. And lots of times people take these depression medications and say, oh, God, I feel better. I don't feel as down. But the reality is it's a Band-Aid. You know,
right,
you still have
right.
the cut, you still have the wounds, and you still have some healing to do. And there is no easy button. There is no quick fix. If you're really committed to overcoming depression and living a happy, joyful life, it does take work. You have to face your demons.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is that you're an adult now. You've got the ego strength to be able to face them and get the support you need to do it effectively. And put these demons, lock them away, send them, you know, get rid of them so they're never there bothering you again. And you can do it. And it's so powerful of a process. It just frees you from everything that was just binding you before. It's just an amazing experience.
That I'm hearing a very strong message of hope from what you're sharing. And
absolutely.
I do want to touch on the side effects that you talked about. That now that's more than I realized, but it's not a secret that before I started on my journey back to health, I was on 9 medications a day for a while. 2 of those were antidepressants. because one made the other one work better. But as you were talking about the headaches, I took headache medication every single day, multiple times a day. And I thought that's just how life was. And I gained weight and all of that. And I have found, I don't know whether this is accurate or not, but I found that it was harder to lose the weight. Even after weaning myself off the meds, it was just harder. It adds to whatever else might be going on metabolically. In my observation, that's not a clinical judgment. That's my experience of being in my body. It just made it tougher. And, you know, as I said, there were certainly times in my life where I took medications, and this isn't about, okay, everybody stop. You work with your doctor. You've got to work with your doctor on that. If you are on medications and you're interested in getting off, or, you know, if you're looking at maybe that's something you need to be doing, but you'd really rather do something else. Dana's just shared a whole bunch of things with you that you could do. What role, if any, do you feel that like exercise and proper food have in the whole thing? Are they irrelevant? Do they play a role?
They play a role. You know, the one thing that I would say that is so important, again, this is about charging your energy, and it's about getting in your body, right? And really helping to start shifting things. Breath work. By far, in a way, breath work is extremely powerful in really getting you grounded, bringing you into the present moment. And it doesn't have to be a meditation breath work. It could just be breathing deep. You know, we call this, one thing I do with my clients is called a deep belly breathing. And it's about, you know, inhaling with your nose and getting your stomach as big and, you know, uplift your stomach as much as possible, and exhaling deep, you know, with your mouth and inhaling, eventually putting some sound to that. It just helps to kind of to help you get more in touch with your energy and with your body. That's something that is really important to do to start. But there are other things that I think, in addition to true therapy, that can help, which is, you know, to your point that you mentioned, it's nutrition, meditation, yoga, all these things that kind of take you out of your head and out of your space, right? And that put you back into your body. So movement, dance, breath work, those kinds of things can be just really powerful. And nutrition, supplements, herbal remedies, natural supplements, all of those can have an effect, but do your research. If you go to my site, I have a site called depression-test.net. And on that site, you'll see all kinds of information about herbal remedies and natural treatments and so forth, so you can do some more research. And by all means, you know, this report will be available to your listeners too, so you can get a little bit more down and dirty about, you know, what the studies have uncovered and what the review of those studies have uncovered around the true effectiveness or ineffectiveness of depression medications.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd like to back up just a little bit and talk about, too, some misconceptions people might have about psychotherapy and what that might be like. I think a lot of people resist going to talk to a counselor or a therapist.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so. They do. I think it just depends on really, you know, again, this all goes back to stigma, right? There's a stigma about being depressed. There's a stigma about if you're going to a therapist. A therapist is called a shrink, and shrinks are a psychiatrist who just, you know, put you on pills and you're going to a shrink. There must be something wrong with you. Psychotherapy is just a form of therapy. So it's more Freudian, digging deeper. You know, there's Jungian, there's Freudian, there's Eric Erickson, there's all kinds of different pioneers of different forms of therapy. Psychotherapist is one of them. Psychosomatic therapist is really what I am, because it's more body-based and energy-based, but psychosomatic people usually just don't understand that, that terminology. Core energetic therapy was founded by John Perakis. It's actually interesting because I'm four generations away from Freud, because Freud, Wilhelm Reich studied under Freud, and then John Perakis studied under Wilhelm Reich, and then I studied under John Perakis. So, and it's a whole nother modality. It's really kind of cool that I'm four generations away from Freud.
Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, really looking at the energetic aspects of our emotions and our bodies and that kind of stuff, and how we can really heal and transform through working with our energy in our body.
I think Freud would be impressed with the work that you're doing.
Oh, yeah, it's just I love it because I did it as a client and I just continue. I'm kind of a personal development junkie. And, you know, I think when we're talking about the stigma of psychotherapy and stuff, you know, lose the words, focus on getting the job done. So for you and your true heart of hearts, do you feel you want, are you yearning for more? Are you yearning for a greater connection to spirit, greater connection to yourself? Are you feeling numb and you just want to feel vibrantly alive again? Those are going to be the indications that, you know, you can reach out for support and for help. And there is nothing wrong with it. I tell my girls, you know, my daughters, I say, hey, I'll be in therapy on and off the rest of my life because that's what keeps me grounded. That's what keeps me focused. And that's what keeps me connected to my higher self and to spirit is by continuing to work on my stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if someone were interested, we're going to make sure everybody knows how to reach you directly, but if someone's looking for a therapist or they're looking for treatment options, do you have some suggestions as to how people can go about finding, first of all, figuring out what's kind of right for them, and then finding that person that might be the right facilitator or leader or coach or counselor? Are there some tips you can give us there?
Yeah, I think more, it depends on what you're trying to do. So for instance, if you're really in the format of what I mentioned just a little while ago around, I really want to be connected to spirit. I want greater meaning and purpose in my life. I want to feel vibrantly alive. And gosh, I don't know why I feel so stuck. If you're in that kind of a place, you know, you can go find a therapist locally that can work with you or, you know, virtual. Like I said, I do a lot of virtual work with clients. And you can find someone who can work with you in that regard. But if you do feel like you might be truly depressed, that's where it's important to go get a proper diagnosis so that you and a therapist can together outline an appropriate treatment plan for you. And again, there's so many different modalities of therapy. And, you know, like I said, I started out with talk therapy as a client and as a therapist. Mm-hmm. Oh, tell me more about that. Oh, so I understand you feel XYZ. Is that true? Yes. You know, it just didn't do it for me. Some people do very well on, you know, talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and so forth. For me, what really transformed me was doing the more deeper, body healing work. And there's all kinds of resources out there. You can look for bioenergetics, you can look for core energetics, and just search the therapy, you know, options in your area. I have on my depression site as well a page about hotlines and resources that you can look at, but you can always start there and then they can refer you to someone locally. Lots of times just word of mouth, just asking around and, you know, start, You got to start somewhere and see how it resonates. And I think the key also is making sure you find someone that you really genuinely respect and you jive with. It doesn't necessarily mean someone you totally like, because if you're a good therapist, I'm going to be ticking you off every now and then. Because I'm going to be pushing your buttons, right?
Right, just like a good coach would.
Right, yeah. And you're doing it in a very respectful way because you're truly doing it for the purpose of benefiting the client and helping them process and move through some deep stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I love how you said it depends where you are in your process, and everybody's in a different place and everybody has different needs. One thing I've learned in the last few years of exploring a lot of different things on my own behalf and on the behalf of my clients is that everything out there, every modality does work for somebody, but nothing works for everybody exactly the same. There's no one thing that is the one single answer. So it's finding the right thing for you and not being afraid to ask the questions and to poke around and ask for referrals maybe, or, you know, talk to a trusted friend or a spiritual advisor if you're not sure where to start too. It seems like that might be a good place to go as well.
Exactly.
But just make sure it's somebody you really trust and can trust. You know, they've earned your trust.
Right. And I think, and bottom line, just remember that there is so much support out there if you're just willing to reach your hand up and say, hey, you know, One is, you know, really being honest with yourself about where you truly are and then where you want to be, and being able to, you know, let go of all the stigma and all the BS that's out there about you being weak or not strong or, you know, all that crap that's out there.
Right.
You know, don't listen to all that. Stay true to who you are. Stay integrity with who you are and where, what kind of person you want to become. And then you empower yourself to go get the help you need to do that.
I think that is beautifully, beautifully said. And something that we can completely lose sight of when we're feeling low like that is that there is help out there. So take the step, take a deep breath, pick up the phone or go to the internet and do some research. And it sounds as though one of the best places people could start then is at depression-test.net?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, awesome.
Yep,
we're going to make
if
sure
want to reach out. There's I have a link there for a free consultation. I have depression tests that people can take, and I have all kinds of resources and information available to you. And then of course you'll get this report that I've developed for your listeners.
Okay, and the report is going to have all kinds of information about research, and what else can they look for in that?
It's very specific towards highlighting some of the fallacies in the clinical trials that have been conducted, so you understand where the shortcomings were there. It's talking about the alternatives and the studies that were done on medications versus therapy, and also talking about the review process of whether depression really is or is not a disease and why it's not.
Okay. That sounds like a very empowering document to have and to read for all of us.
Very informative. And again, be informed before you start making decisions. Don't blind, you know, don't just go blindly, you know, for the medications. Make an informed decision as you move forward.
Right. That's awesome. So we're going to send in the email that everyone will get tomorrow. You'll have the link that'll let you access that free report that Dana's providing for you. And until then, if you're eager to get to depression-test.net, you can go there right away and connect with her there and take that test that she's offering. It's a great resource. Dana, before we wrap up, I just want to say again, I am so grateful that you had the time to fit this into your schedule and to share the wealth of knowledge and information that you have to share with us and your personal experience. I want to ask you, you mentioned a couple of things. So I do want to ask if somebody right now is listening, thinking, oh my gosh, this is me. What do I do? What is the first thing that person should do? Your best tip for them for right now in this moment?
I'm going to answer, give with two, right? Because if you're in a real funk and you think you're seriously depressed, but you haven't taken a test, you can go to my site and take a test. If you find out that you're depressed, you can reach out to contact me. The other side is if you're just looking to really, have a life of greater meaning and purpose, again, reach out. You know, I can help you. I'm not the answer for everybody, nor will I ever claim to be. So reach out. You can use me as a starting point, and we can have a 30-minute consultation to talk about what's going on in your life, what are your challenges that you're dealing with, where do you want to be, what do you want to accomplish, and together we can decide the right path forward for you. And it may not be me. I'm not the solution, like I said, for everybody, but at least I can help, you know, guide you along the way and get you started on your journey.
Mm-hmm. I think that's wise. We already know where Dana comes from, what her training is, what her experience has been. It sounds like a really good idea to have a conversation with a trusted advisor. So I really, really want to thank you so much for being with us today and sharing with us. And I'm very grateful. Thank you so much, Dana.
Oh, I am too. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciated this platform to help get my message out and to help educate people on this topic. It's so important. So thank you so much.